aside with Art Waste. With the theme of trash, Art Waste is set to be filled with superb pieces of 2D, 3D, and video art from local artists. Check out the lineup for Music Waste and buy a pass or individual tickets today on musicwaste.ca.
You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC.
Welcome to Scream Therapy. I'm your host, Jason Schurz. In October of 2018, I found myself in the hospital, sitting across from a psychiatrist who was telling me I had bipolar. I was sent home with a bunch of medication and laid on the couch for a week. I had my iTunes library on shuffle, trying to shake the hornet's nest from my head. Ever since I was a kid, I've been using loud music as a form of therapy. Punk rock and mental health have always been connected. This podcast looks at that connection through the lens of different guests. This is Scream Therapy. Sometimes what we don't know about ourselves can be our worst enemy. Chris Broach was in one of the most popular emo bands of the 90s, Braid. When the band broke up in 99, Broach was experiencing uncontrollable irritability and was drinking heavily. In his own words, he was being a dick all the time. And upon reflection, he believes his behavior was a large reason that Braid disbanded. Years later, when he was diagnosed with ADHD, Broach began to understand why he was behaving how he was. A lot of people with mental health conditions, including myself, believe that diagnosis doesn't excuse any past indiscretions. But perhaps it can be an explanation. With Broach now medicated for his ADHD, Braid has done some reunion shows, and on and off again has been a functioning band since 2004. Time doesn't heal all wounds, but like a journey towards mental health, it can be forgiving.
Chris Broach. People probably know me best for the band Braid, co-singer, guitar player. The Firebird band, which I did during and then after Braid, and then a few other bands, Sunset, recently SNST, it's abbreviated, and then my solo stuff, Chris Broach. You know, I came into punk rock music, I think I was probably sixth or seventh grade. I was listening to a lot of rap music. I was really into like breakdancing too in junior high, like because Electric Boogaloo was out and all those breakdance, Breakin' and Breakin' 2 were out. I wore parachute pants. You know, junior high, seventh, eighth grade is really when, you know, I started skateboarding. And I met this kid who lived a few houses down who introduced me to Minor Threat. That really changed the trajectory of who I really was. you know, was angry, and it was, for whatever reason, it spoke to me. I mean, it spoke to me directly. Like, I got it. This is the greatest thing I've ever heard. So I really, overnight almost, it changed my trajectory into sort of punk rock. My mom and dad were kind of hippies. They went to all that, like the Doors, the Beatles, and Jimi Hendrix and stuff like that. My dad was into that more heavy stuff, Cream. He listened to records and stuff when I was growing up. And, you know, that might have been a little bit of the foundation. But Minor Threat really put me into this whole idea of, there is something out there that speaks to me. This is mine. I was still listening to rap, and I still do. I'm into lots of different kinds of music. But punk really changed my life. It opened the doors to a whole world that was just fresh. I met some people. They showed me other bands, you know, Bad Religion and Peg Boy and a bunch of these, you know, Naked Ray Gun, a bunch of Chicago bands that we got into. One of the things that happened was I met a few kids at high school who were like, hey, man, I heard you're into Minor Threat. You might want to check out Fugazi, because this is Ian from Minor Threat's new band. And this was in 1990. I went to high school with a few guys that were in a band called Captain Jazz. This guy, Tim Kinsella, was the guy who introduced me to Fugazi. And then later to Nation of Ulysses, who I hated at first. Then I loved. I didn't like it at first, but it grew on me. That was really my opening. From Minor Threat, I jumped to New Wave. I was into The Cure, The Smiths. I had a friend who worked at a record store that I could skateboard over to. I could just skate over to. It was three blocks away from my house where I grew up. He would make me mixtapes. He got me into Jawbreaker. We were all just listening to music. I was going to a basement show at a friend's house in the neighborhood right across the street from my neighborhood, which was the Kinsella's basement, you know, seeing Captain Jazz or some of my first punk bands opened for some of those shows in the basements. And it was an outlet for me. That whole idea that Minor Threat gave me in the beginning was, now all of a sudden my friends are doing this, and like, you can do that too. And then my friends were traveling. They were playing in shows in other cities and other states. We'd travel to go see them. And it was like, well, you can do this. This is great. I'm going to do this. I was always running, man. I was always running to go be with my people. For whatever reason, this stuff spoke to me. Captain Jazz was doing something that I had never heard. So then I went away to school. I went to U of I in Champaign. And before I even started class, I went to see Braid play a show, because I had listened to Friction, which was Bob. I got into them because Captain Jazz was playing shows around the area, and Friction was a band in another suburb. I went to go see that band, and I left the show as a member of the band that night. It's really what pushed me into touring and traveling, and we called it emo. Other people called it punk, but it was our music. You know, we were really doing something that was really our own. And all the shows, you know, were basement shows, you know, house shows. We get shows at venues once in a while, but we were too young to be in the venue. It wasn't that fun. Our friends couldn't come. I started traveling, and I dropped out of school to play in the band. So here's where I think the mental health piece comes in, is the dropping out of school. So I had undiagnosed ADHD until I was in my 30s. No idea. And Braid, for me, I yelled a lot in Braid. And it was an outlet for me to get, you know, some of this, whatever was going on in my head, out. I didn't know I had problems, right? A lot of people around me knew I had problems, and they would tell me, something's wrong with you, or why are you like this, or I think you're an alcoholic and I'm going to stop playing in this because of it. This kind of stuff happened a lot, and I blamed everyone else. Oh, they don't have it or whatever. So let me take a step back. So the outlet for me was, you know, the yelling and getting it out there, especially when Braid was touring all the time, every night, jumping around. And I didn't realize that I had ADHD, but exercise is the best thing for ADHD. So that was the therapy for me, was every night screaming, yelling, yeah, just really, really emoting, getting everything out. And then Braid sort of ended. We were touring nonstop in 1998, and I was a dick all the time. Everybody annoyed me all the time, and people still annoy me all the time. But I didn't realize that that was because I was unable to focus. Like, for example, I would drink a Diet Coke or a coffee and go to sleep. That's what helped me go to sleep, because I had undiagnosed ADHD. So undiagnosed ADHD leads to a lot of anger problems, issues with other people, being annoyed. Anything that you've read about ADHD is this. But I was diagnosed with depression, anxiety. I had a panic attack. So Braid broke up, and I was ready for it to break up. We toured 8-9 months in 1998, and 99 we went to Japan. It was a bust, and it really sucked. That didn't help. I was unmedicated totally. I didn't know that I had a problem, and I was drinking heavily. That's how I was medicating. I kept doing that for years, years and years.
So being diagnosed with ADHD in your 30s and having all those symptoms previous to that, and you mentioned people calling you out on it in certain ways, there's a lot there with depression. You mentioned panic attacks, the irritability, anxiety, I would imagine. That's a lot. When you think about the ADHD, how does that relate to the rest of those things? Is it the overarching thing? Is it one of many?
I believe that it was the main thing that gave me everything, because I'm medicated now. You know, I take medication and I don't have panic attacks as much as I used to. I don't have as much. I mean, I still have anxiety, but I think it's because my brain got wired up. I know things to do. Take deep breaths. Make sure I take my medication on time. If I don't take my medication on time, I start to get anxious. I still take medication for anxiety. I take medication for depression. I think there's some comorbidity there, though. I had depression forever, and I don't know if it's because of the ADHD, but, you know, ADHD is one of those things where the more I learn about it, the more I fully embrace the fact that that's been my problem all the live long day, all my life, because I can get along with anybody, but just to a point. You know, I fit in with everybody. I can get along with anybody, talk about anything. I have 100 interests, but as soon as I'm bored with something, I don't want to do anything. I don't want anything to do with it. As soon as something's not fresh and new to me, I get bored. You know, I remember having band practice and stuff and just starting to get irritable and being like, you guys, I don't know what's going on. It's not you guys. There's something wrong. Let's just go through it. It's not you. It's me. And I just remember getting in these moods, just bad, bad, bad moods. And people being like, why do you swear so much at me? And I don't mean it. I just would say it. It just comes out. It's still an issue for me because I'm impatient. I would confront people a lot, like when I would be in bad moods. The other thing about the ADHD is there's this thing that out of sight, out of mind. So I would be dating a girl, for example, and this was back in the 90s, but once I went on tour, I didn't really care. And it wasn't that I didn't care. It's just that the relationship would fall apart. We didn't have cell phones and I was on to the next. So it really affected every aspect of my life, relationships with people, jobs. My wife jokes that I've worked everywhere. You know, I point to this, oh, I used to work there. I used to work there.
Yeah.
I've worked a million jobs.
Do you look back on all the time with Braid and sort of marvel at how long you were able to keep it going?
I think it was my outlet. I was young, just turned 18 right after I joined, and through to 22, 23. And I was doing the thing that I wanted to do. So as an ADHD person, when you're doing the thing you want to do, you're hyper-focused, you're into it. This is what you want. This is who you are. But when it started to get stale for me towards the end, for whatever reason, And it's not that it got stale. I just got bored. I wanted to try new things. Along with ADHD, again, the more I learn, you get offended really easily and overreact. I joke sometimes, like if we had had therapists and things like that back then, like maybe we would have not broken up at the time. That's just what happened. And I would say that probably my mental health was probably the reason that Braid broke up. I mean, I was the reason. We, you know, back then I wanted to make, I thought it was everybody else, right? I was like, oh, yeah, everybody's got issues and we just all don't get along. But the truth is those three guys went on to do Hey Mercedes and I went on to do my own stuff and then went through lots of band members in the Firebird band. And not because my ADHD, but maybe, I wanted the tour and I thought that everybody in every band would be like the guys in Braid and I. Everybody's ready. We're 100% dedicated. Let's go on tour. Who cares if this show sucks? Okay, we're just eating bagels. Who cares? You know, like, doesn't matter. And not everybody was like that. And if they weren't like that, I had no patience for it. I knew what I wanted to do. And if you weren't with me, then you were against me. That was another piece.
It sounds like a pretty heavy burden to hold that you feel as though it was your fault and, you know, obviously not entirely your fault, but that you played a really large role in not being able to continue with that project. And even the fact that the three of them went on to do another thing, it's looking back, how does that feel?
To be honest, when we broke up, when that happened in 99, it was a big deal. I was done, but then those guys went on to do something. And looking back on it now, that hurt a little bit. I didn't realize that it was me. I don't think I realized it was me until really recently, to be honest. Yeah, I'm doing therapy. And in the last 6 months to a year, I started therapy in earnest. I've tried therapists for 20 some years and just always stopped pretty quick. It was hard. I mean, everybody blamed me. And I felt, you know, there was a lot of stuff going around at the time. Polyvinyl had a message board up and people were really talking about me on that message board. And it was hard because I was trying to do something new with the Firebird band as someone with ADHD would. I was trying to do something fresh, trying to follow my id. And this is what I want to do. This is me wearing eyeliner and fur coats. And that just didn't jive with what people, who people thought I was. Firebird band went on tour and things were going well, but you know, I was drinking heavily and losing members here and there to different things. I mean, we all drank heavily at the time. Everybody did. I mean, I drank heavily for a long time. Then I quit after the initial Braid reunion tour in 2004. I went to treatment and stopped drinking for about 3 years. And then I started again, but I wasn't medicated still. I mean, I was medicated for anxiety. I was medicated for depression. But I tell you what, in my 30s, I was like, is this how people are normally? Like they can wake up and take the trash out and they're not mad about it and do normal things like, you know, follow up with people and stay in touch and be normal, quote unquote normal. And then I stopped taking it for a while. I don't know why. Just at some point I stopped. Maybe I lost my health insurance or something or didn't have it or something. But recently, again, in the last year, I started taking it again. And it's really made a big difference. And it's part of the reason I'm able to do some of the solo stuff that I'm doing.
Yeah, I find that for me because I also have ADHD. For me, it's the sort of blips in thinking. I'll be thinking about something and trying to focus and plan something. And all of a sudden, it'll get blipped over here and here. And it's really hard to stay focused.
Absolutely. I think the problem for me is I would sit down to do music and open up the computer, but my phone will go off. I'll look at my phone. All of a sudden, I'm scrolling. I want to get a flip phone, to be honest, because it's a big distraction for someone like me. I put this thing on my phone called Refocus. It's an app called Refocus, and it blocks social media or any app that you want for as much time as you want to set it. And then it blocks it for the rest of the day. So that's helped me, because it is true. If I have to do laundry, I'll go out and plant trees out in my, you know what I mean? I'll buy some trees, plant them. It's whatever sort of takes your focus for the minute, because you're chasing that dopamine. And I think chasing dopamine with ADHD is also why you have conflict with people, or why I had conflict with people. The other problem I have is I can read people really well. I know when someone's upset with me, I can see it, right? I can read it on their face or in their micro expressions. I just know. It makes relationships difficult because they could be saying one thing, but I'm seeing what's beneath there, what's underneath it. I want to get to the bottom of it, but I'm also offended and, you know, all this other stuff. And I'm hurt. All these things that leads to depression. It leads to anxiety. It leads to me not wanting to go out and be social, because I've got to deal with, as a person with ADHD, every input is just as important as the other input. So being a crowd of people who are all talking and stuff, I'm hearing this conversation, that conversation, that conversation. And I'm also trying to have a conversation with someone, and all of it's happening at once, and I'm hearing all of it, and I'm hearing and seeing, and it's just too much. Even medicated, I do not love going to, like when we play shows now, Bray just got back from Japan, for example. I'll be at the hotel until right before I have to play, because it's very difficult to be around a lot of people. My anxiety's real high. It's after the show that I'm able to be around people, because I think my dopamine is up, right? I'm jumping around, endorphins are going, everything's going on, and I feel great. I can hang out and talk for a little bit. But as soon as that dies down, I got to get back and go to sleep.
How have things changed for you after being diagnosed with ADHD? Not only, but also with playing music.
You know, after being diagnosed with ADHD in my 30s, I'm late 40s now, nothing much changed at first. Because I was medicated, but not medicated. I was taking medication, but I wasn't doing any therapy or anything. But lately, in the past year, to make a long story short, I got sick in 2020. I had cancer, and I'm still dealing with some of those after effects. The chemo gave me a heart attack, so I couldn't take anything because my heart was messed up. It's fine now. I'm good. Now that I've sort of embraced what it is, I'm able to realize when I'm going down a rabbit hole into irritability and why. Because I always used to be like, why am I being a dick? Why am I being a short? Why am I being, you know, all these things. And now I recognize it, and I'm able to take a step out of that, remove myself, take some deep breaths, come back renewed and understand that, okay, this is just part of this problem. I set alarms on my phone that says, take your medication, take your medication, take your medication. The other thing I started doing is taking vitamins, because taking vitamins has really helped me. I take magnesium and a bunch of other stuff, zinc, bunch of stuff that they say you should take with ADHD, and 100% works really well along with the medication I'm prescribed. As far as music goes, I'm now able to sit down and write something start to finish. I was having a lot of trouble for years. There's this thing called body doubling with ADHD, where you need someone with you to do stuff. And I think that's what was good about Braid and other bands, when I had a co-writer or co-person that I could sit down and write with. I'm able to finally, at this point, now that I'm medicated, know what's going on, sit down and get hyper-focused a little bit on the songs I'm doing. It's made a difference in my ability to get stuff done and release. And I'm sort of delivering songs as I finish them. What it's allowing me to do is complete projects. I'm also able to complete a lot of projects at home. I planted a bunch of trees recently at the house, which is really fun. So I'm able to follow some of my interests and refocus myself, and I'm a better parent, I'm a better husband, but I still have all these issues. It's just, I recognize what's happening when I'm being irritable. I go down a hole, and that hole can be super anger hole. I hate that. I have to recognize it and steer myself off. It's hard to do still. It is hard.
That was my conversation with Chris Broach of Braid, chrisbroach.com. For more episodes of Screen Therapy, go to screentherapyhq.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. Big news, the Screen Therapy book is available now. Screen Therapy, A Punk Journey Through Mental Health, tells my story and the stories of others who use punk as a catalyst for mental health. Like this podcast, it links the community-minded punk scene with the mental wellness of the punks who belong to it. To order the book, go to screentherapyhq.com. For merch, check out the newly opened store at screentherapyhq.com/store. And for even more designs, check out Screen Therapy on TeePublic. Okay, enough promoting. It's time for some thanking. Thank you for listening to Screen Therapy. Doing this podcast and talking to folks about punk rock and mental health has been a crucial part of my own mental stability, and it means so much to me that you're out there listening. Screen Therapy is created in the Cathet region of coastal British Columbia, Canada, on the traditional territory of the Klahaman Nation. Contact me at screentherapyhq.com or email me at screentherapypodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Let's talk about punk rock and mental health. Until next time, take care and be well.